I'm Tom Greco. What I'd like to see come out of this meeting is a real honest-to-goodness effort to get some kind of complementary exchange system going here in Tucson. And I hope that what I can share with you tonight will help to motivate and at least begin to prepare the way for that to happen. Basically, what I thought we would do tonight is to talk about the nitty-gritty of how you actually get a complementary exchange system started. The things that I've learned in the experiences of Tucson Traders and Let's Sonora and various other exchange systems that I've been involved with in some way or another make it clear that we have a number of issues that need to be dealt with. If you want to get this thing going in a big way, if you want to have a system that is really going to make a difference in people's lives, you have to deal with issues of design, of management, financing, implementation strategies, and marketing. And, you know, I've been working on this for a long time, and it's only within the last couple of years that people have really been paying attention in significant numbers. Up to now, it's been pretty much change-oriented people, people who had some vision, people who were awake to the problems that confront the country and the world. But now, with the financial meltdown and all of the difficulties that people are experiencing right in their own backyard, they're beginning to search for answers. A lot of people are waking up and saying, what's going on here and why is this happening? So this quote from John Nesbitt, I think, is a very important one. In fact, I used it as a cover quote in my previous book, Money, Understanding, and Creating Alternatives to Legal Tender. And right now, we have the economic necessity developing along with the changing values. So this is a time when something can really happen. Now, on the design front, I think this is where a lot of complementary currency efforts go wrong. We've had a lot of different designs that have been implemented over the years. You know, the complementary currency movement in its modern manifestation has been going on for 25 years. And still, we have no really significant good working model. We've got Ithaca hours, we've got Toronto dollars, we've got Berkshires, we've got Let's. Let's probably comes the closest to a good design. It's a type of mutual credit clearing system. But even Let's has not penetrated the mainstream and managed to get to any significant size and become an important element in people's lives. So one of the problems with currencies like Ithaca hours is that they are handed out willy-nilly to people without adequate fiduciary responsibility. You know, we're talking about financial instruments here. And so whoever puts a financial instrument into circulation has a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that the purpose of that instrument is fulfilled. And the purpose of a financial instrument is reciprocity. A currency is a reciprocal exchange mechanism. It's a way of assuring that when you take a currency in exchange for real value, the goods and services that you offer, that you get real value in return. Goods and services that you want that are of equivalent value. So the problem with currencies like Toronto dollars and Berkshires is that they're sold into circulation. So in order for them to circulate, somebody has to put up some cash. So you're still tied to the conventional money system. And so they defeat themselves right at the beginning by maintaining the dependency on U.S. dollars. So we have to get beyond a currency that's sold for cash. In order to be really effective, a currency needs to be spent into circulation. It has to be our own local financial instrument. It has to be something that monetizes the value of our own productivity in our local community. Now, this idea of monetization, it's a fancy word that simply says we take the value of things that we have to offer for sale and we put it in the form that can be used as a payment medium. So, for example, when banks monetize your note, let's say your mortgage note, what they're doing is they're taking the value of your house and converting it into a form that can be spent, can be used as a payment medium. So when they take your note as an asset, they create money, deposits to your account. So they're taking the value of your house and putting it into spendable form, cash. So we need to do the same thing on a local basis. Instead of depending on the banking system to monetize the value that we create, we need to monetize our own value. That means spending into circulation our own currency based on our own production. And as I mentioned the other night in my presentation, this currency can be spent into circulation by a single trusted issuer or by associated members of a credit clearing association, which I described the other night as well. And that happens when real value changes hands. In order for a currency to come into circulation, a buyer needs to offer it to a seller, and the seller needs to accept it. So this is an agreement between a buyer and a seller. So the buyer can originate this currency by buying something with it. So just to talk about a single trusted issuer, for example, maybe TEP. It's a locally owned, and I think relatively locally owned, electric power company. And they're at least making some efforts to develop some sustainable sources of electricity. Let's suppose that TEP were to pay some of its suppliers and some of its employees with TEP currency, vouchers that would be redeemable for electricity. Think that'd be a good idea? Sure, why not? Most everybody has an electric bill. Why wouldn't you accept TEP vouchers in payment for what you have to sell? Because you know you can always pass on the TEP vouchers back to TEP and get electricity for it. So this is a case of a single trusted issuer, and this has precedent historically. You know, in my previous book, I talk about the case of Schwanenkirchen, a town in Bavaria in southern Germany, where they had a coal mine. And the coal mine was shut down during the Great Depression because there wasn't enough money in circulation. The mine couldn't sell what it produced, and it couldn't pay its workers. So the owner of the mine issued this local currency that was redeemable for coal. And all the shopkeepers in the local community agreed to accept it because they knew it could be redeemed for coal. So when you have real value behind a currency, then you have something that can really circulate and become a supplemental medium of exchange throughout the community. But better still would be to organize many local businesses like TEP into a credit clearing circle where they can trade among themselves without the use of conventional money and where they can jointly issue a currency into circulation that could provide this local exchange medium that could circulate and provide an alternative source of funds besides the banks and the Federal Reserve. Now, also, these systems need to be managed properly. You have to consider it to be a business. Whether it's a non-profit or a for-profit business, you have to provide service to your clients, your customers. You need to be responsive to your clients' needs. Another problem that many community currencies have faced is that they've depended on volunteer labor. And volunteer labor eventually burns out, and they have to find a way to make a living and support themselves. So it's the money-making activities that take precedence over their volunteer activities, and they eventually drop away. So you need to provide adequate compensation to the people that are doing the work. And there is a certain amount of work involved in managing one of these systems. We need to pay attention to finance as well. Usually these systems begin with no money or very little money in the way of startup capital. And so they never have adequate coverage of all the functions that need to be taken care of to really get a business off the ground and thriving. And they typically do not generate sufficient revenues to sustain themselves. If you're providing a service that's of value to people, people will be willing to pay for it. So you have to have some kind of a fee structure that provides adequate revenues to maintain the system. Now, when it comes to implementation, there are various strategies that can be followed. But in order for a system like this to be of use, it has to be part of the mainstream economy. In the past, local currencies and exchange systems like LETS have not managed to penetrate the mainstream economy. They've been sort of operating on the fringe, so they haven't attracted enough major suppliers, either at the retail level or at any other level, in order to make it convenient and useful and significant to satisfying people's needs. So we've got to achieve a certain critical mass. And people always ask, well, what is that critical mass? And it's not just a quantitative thing, it's also a qualitative thing. You have to have enough participants in the system, and you have to have a wide enough range of goods and services being offered for the local currency in order for it to be useful and significant. And it needs to include all levels of supply chain. Now, the supply chain consists of these various levels: retail, wholesale, manufacturing, basic commodity producers. This is the supply chain. This is the way products get produced and migrate up through the economic circuit.
Can you give an example of the last one?
Basic commodity producers are mines, forestry products companies, farmers. They produce the basic commodities that are inputs to manufacturing. Then the manufacturers supply the wholesalers, and the wholesalers supply the retailers. So if the currency is going to be used at each level of the supply chain to pay their suppliers, the retailers want to pay the wholesalers. The wholesalers want to pay the manufacturers. The manufacturers want to pay the basic commodity producers. So you have to involve all of those levels in order to have a really fully functional exchange system. And of course, you have employees at every level, so you've got to get the employees involved at some stage as well. And of course, the employees are consumers, and the consumers are the ones that patronize the retailers. So you complete the circuit. I've got a diagram somewhere, but it's not in the slideshow. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Okay, so you've got retailers paying the wholesalers with the local currency, and you've got the wholesalers paying the manufacturers, and they pay the basic commodity producers, and they all pay the employees, and the employees patronize the retailers. Okay, the next thing is marketing. You need to be clear about what the value proposition is. What are you offering to your patrons or your clients? Well, when you consider this, you have both marketing and financial advantages. One of the financial advantages to a participant in a mutual credit clearing system, and this includes the commercial barter exchanges, is a reduced need for cash. The businesses that belong to a commercial barter exchange, or the people that belong to a LETS system, they have a reduced need for cash, because now they can get what they need within the system without cash. They simply get a debit to their account when they buy something. But of course, they have to work off those debits by providing something. So your goods and services pay for the goods and services that you're purchasing. So you have a reduced need for cash. That means easier access to credit, because it is a credit system. And for businesses, it provides enhanced opportunities to sell your excess capacity. You know, virtually every restaurant has meals that it could sell that it doesn't sell. Theaters have empty seats. Airplanes have empty seats. You have virtually every business has excess capacity. And it's not only because there's too much competition, but often it's because the people who would be customers don't have the money to be customers. So that's an artifact of our political money system, is that people down at the grassroots community levels are often getting starved for cash. Their earning power is reduced because you have all these parasitic elements that I spoke of sucking value out of the economy in ways that we don't understand or see. So by creating these alternative exchange systems, we have enhanced opportunities to sell our excess capacity. And one of the most important things in penetrating the market, and we do have to look at this as a marketing opportunity, is we have to make it easy, cheap, and low risk. You know, we have good examples of that in the cyber world. How many people have a Gmail account? How many people have a Yahoo account? How many people have a Hotmail account? Why do you have those accounts? Because it's free, it's easy to sign up, and it's convenient. When Hotmail was probably one of the first to really get into this. When they first started, they made it free. They made it convenient to sign up. And when you sent a Hotmail message, there was an ad at the end of every message that said to the recipient, "Would you like to have a Hotmail account yourself?" So it was all of these things, and they virtually took over the market until competition came in. So that's the preface that I wanted to start with to give some points of discussion, and maybe at this point we can just open it up and talk about these things. I do have other PowerPoint shows that I can show, but I think it's best to leave that for now.
I have a question about taxation. So in this system that you're proposing, the taxation is going to be based on what the consumer pays?
That's a good question, and it's not one that's easily answered. That's a question that came up the other night when I spoke. And if this is a significant element in the economy, you can be sure that the IRS is going to want to tax it. And the commercial exchange systems, as a matter of routine, report their members' trading activity to the IRS. This is an agreement they made many years ago because initially the IRS thought that commercial barter exchanges were a tax dodge and they were being harassed by the IRS. And so, you know, they had discussions about it, and the commercial barter industry maintained that they were only third-party record keepers providing this cashless exchange mechanism for their clients, and that they weren't trying to evade taxes, so they agreed to provide the reporting that the IRS required. So the tax issue is a completely separate issue, and we should not try to fight that battle at the same time.
Here's a question. Are the utility companies going to investigate it? Are they going to
mean, it seems ideal to me, because we all pay utility. But it seems ideal to me to involve the utility company.
No, I've not had any discussions with them about it.
This is where I think almost it might make sense to explain where you are with your projects and you're almost ready to launch them, and then maybe you can take my question.
Oh, okay. My name is Jean, and I'm with the Tucson Local Emergency Group, and I'm just going to try to quickly explain what we have going. And sitting next to me is Michael, our computer programmer, who created a software system that will... Who created a software system that's going to be internet accessible, and it's a ledger system where everyone would have a ledger that starts at zero, although you could pay in and increase the value of your ledger, but besides that, everyone starts at zero, and then, for example, if I wanted to buy, if I wanted to buy carrots from Linda for $3, then my account would go negative $3, and her account would go positive $3. And then say I do bookkeeping for someone and charge them $35, then their account goes negative $35, my account goes positive $35 for a net of 32 days. And the computer program would also be like a Craigslist where we have directories of the members of this program who, like, there'd be a directory listing of I offer bookkeeping, I offer vegetables, I offer health care, I offer this, I offer that. And then a currency, an actual script or currency, would evolve out of that, and one could cash out their ledger account into local currency. And then another thing we just started considering is working with pro-neighborhoods and expanding expanding our program one neighborhood at a time. So the density of goods and services is more dense rather than if you're on the east side and someone happens to be on the west side, blah, blah, blah. And instead, you might be able to find someone right in your neighborhood if that's what you want. And then one other thing I just wanted to say is we're also starting to consider this idea of loans where we could bypass the banks, and say someone has the money to loan, they could go on our website and hook up with someone who wants to borrow some money. And it would just be between them one-to-one. They would agree what the details were of the credit exchange. So
I want to say that, when we started, I think we were at the stage of considering it was more like a barter exchange system in the sense that, as Jean mentioned, okay, I want to buy carrots, I'm producing carrots and you're producing eggs, or you're doing woodworking and you're doing electrical work, and this is extremely local. But I believe we're at the point now where we've run into the barrier or something, there is a hiatus we have to jump over, which is the one we're involving established businesses, and this is what Tom was talking about before. And we are right now struggling with this problem of how to involve businesses. Now, the idea of involving the entire supply chain, that's really that's heavy and that's complex, and it requires a lot of effort as well.
Yeah, that's a difficult one because most of your suppliers aren't local once you get beyond the retail level. And that's been a problem for the commercial trade exchanges, too, because they're locally focused. I know one up in Phoenix called TradeSource, and they're basically stuck at the retail level, too, because the retailers get their supplies from out of town.
I wanted to say one more thing, and that is we are ready to launch our program in September. So we're not just sitting around talking, and we really are about to launch it.
except that we don't have a real implementation strategy.
Yeah, we don't need a business model. We basically have less than 100 people in the office.
So that would be my question, the supply chain. I'm recognizing, Brian, I'm sure there's examples in your book. I can think of food that you could get that whole supply chain, or good fresh vegetables. What else? Who else should we go for? Who else can get that whole supply chain?
Well, you have to map the territory. You have to find out who's in business and what kind of things they're offering, what their sources of supply are, what they're buying locally, what they're buying from outside the area.
And where are they getting?
Well, there may be some information already available on that. You know, maybe the U of A or maybe the city or maybe the county has done some research to map that business territory. Do you know anything about that, Trace?
No, the problem is that most efforts have been oriented towards the exact opposite of what currency. Back in the 20th period, they provided money to create trading efforts to actually go out and find clients in Taiwan or whatever.
Sure, but what I'm talking about though is an actual registry of businesses. I know there's a business license process that
they won't let you get access.
Really? That's not public record?
Arizona Local First or whatever that
part is. Local First
Arizona.
Oh, good. So you should work with them on that.
Someone here? Is Lizette here?
No.
She was invited.
Has there been any effort to use fine co-ops as a means to bridge these various gaps in the source? Because even if 50 people or 50 businesses or whatever got together and couldn't find anything local, just the possession of a demand, even if it was purchased from someplace completely out of the local currency, potentially offers a way to say, and anybody here want to satisfy our demand? There's been any efforts?
Well, there was one in England that I know of. They were trying to set up an exchange system that would involve businesses and nonprofit organizations as well. But they never got much traction. What they ended up doing was being a buying club for nonprofit organizations.
My only thought is that if you were to have a buying club and said we want to buy napkins, then you could buy napkins from wherever, but if it was a policy that if anybody produced napkins locally,
Well, if you go to my blog, beyondmoney.net, one of the chapters of my book is in there. It's chapter 16. It's a 5-stage economic development plan, and it's sort of the plan that we're trying to implement in the south of India around Pondicherry. And the first phase of that is mapping the business territory, getting businesses to do more business with one another locally instead of sourcing from outside, and then trying to fill in the gaps, trying to create new businesses that provide locally things that have been bought from outside. So that's part of that plan, but it's still part of the first stage of the plan. The second stage of the plan is once you've got these businesses accustomed to doing more business with one another, then you give them an alternative means of paying one another, which is the mutual credit clearing system.
Just one comment, just a question. I think at the local first state level, that would be possibly the crucial place to go, because local first actually got started in Phoenix, now branched down into Tucson, but it's all the state, and they pretty much match businesses that are local from the state. So it seems to me that would be a really great way to
light staff at trees that they can make. Right now, I think they're making mostly from their lumber and stuff like that. And I think they're laying off people because, they need stuff like that.
Larry, you have a question?
Yeah, there's a couple related things. I agree your view that the system is genius to not be black, but that way you mean hierarchy like your supply chains. I, in the red system, and if I see anything that would sell now, I have nothing to sell, and there's very little that I want to buy from that system. One of the alternatives would be to maybe start creating our own supply system. If I was part of a team of people who were collaborating in producing something, and that product could be used by another team of people who are themselves doing something, then we could begin to exchange across that. But the third one is the retired people who get my income in dollars.
Mm.
How do we relate to the new system? There's a lot of retired people who would like to be into it, but they have nothing to contribute unless they start selling off the volume.
Well, they have dollars.
Well, the kind of labor that I have, I cannot sell to an individual.
Oh, that's true. That's a basic problem. But, you know, we have to monetize the value that we do create in the local community. Now, what you and I as retirees have is dollars. So we could trade dollars for local currency, although that, you know, that isn't... Well, it does help the system because the system needs investment capital. So we can provide investment capital, and a lot of our producers who are producing something need some dollars to buy things from outside that they can't get locally for the local currency. So there's a way to participate. In fact, one of the implementation strategies that is being followed, the people in Portland, Oregon are moving in this direction. There's a plan called Community Way. And it's a way of funding nonprofit organizations with retailer contributions that are in kind. I can show you a PowerPoint on that if you want to see it later. But basically, it's one way to get rapid buy-in by the entire community. There are a couple things that you can do. In fact, when I started talking to people in the mid-90s here, that's what I was trying to get them interested in, was this alternative financing program for nonprofit organizations. And they were more interested in doing a local currency or a LET system, so that's what we got. That's what Tucson Traders came out of. But I was trying to interest them in this community way. This is another brainchild of Michael Linton, who invented LETS. The way Community Way works is that you have retailers in the local area. You go to them and you say, would you be willing to donate a certain amount each month to designate to nonprofit organizations of your choice? Let's say it's the Boys and Girls Club. So the retailer says, okay, I'll donate $500 worth of merchandise every month to the Boys and Girls Clubs. And you get a whole bunch of other businesses to make the same pledge. So now you have the basis. You can issue a local currency on the basis of those merchant pledges. And you can give that currency then to the designated nonprofit organizations. In the first instance, the Boys and Girls Clubs. They're going to get $500 worth of vouchers every month because of this commitment made by, let's say it's a restaurant. So now you have several businesses doing that. Maybe you have $20,000 worth of vouchers every month that are being backed up by local businesses. And these are going to nonprofit organizations that can then pay their workers, maybe give some compensation to volunteers, pay their local suppliers. Now you have a local currency circulating. Now, some of the cash-rich supporters can buy some of these vouchers from the workers who work for nonprofit organizations, because they need conventional cash too. So I might agree to buy $30 worth of vouchers from people that I know who are working for nonprofit organizations. And now they have the cash they need. I have vouchers that I can spend because I go to that restaurant anyway. And now you have a local currency that's improving the whole climate in the local community based on excess capacity that's being donated by local businesses. And this would be, I think, a very effective way to get the whole community behind the local currency. Then later on, in addition to basing the currency on in-kind donations, you can base it on mutual credit clearing, or you can base it on actual goods and services being exchanged.
Interesting, we just started talking about that involving not agreeing about nonprofits or local charities like this.
Yeah.
Although we hadn't quite worked out the scheme,
This is actually well worked out, and there is a community way series of videos that I can point you to.
Clarification
on that. Are businesses donating to the nonprofit shell thing, and then are they donating money, or
no.
Donating directly to nonprofits?
No, let's say Rocky has a restaurant, Rocky's restaurant. Rocky says, they're donating local currency, which they don't have yet, but they're going to earn it because they've made this commitment to accept it in payment for their meals. So Rocky makes the commitment, $500 in local currency every month for the next year. So he doesn't have local currency, but you, the association, are going to issue the local currency on his behalf to his designated nonprofit, the Boys and Girls Clubs. Now they go and they spend the currency in town, in circulation, buying whatever they want from any participating merchant who doesn't necessarily have to be a donor. And eventually it gets back to Rocky's restaurant and he accepts it in payment for meals.
Nobody
has to handle that.
Right. But they could also. But it would be easier for them just to basically imagine.
Keep it in their shop.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Until somebody comes to claim it.
You mentioned, and I think we definitely agree, that there has to be kind of minimum or critical mass before the thing gets really off the ground. And the question that I have is, how do you assess that? What instruments do we use to assess what the critical mass is? And, you know, you talked about management and finance and implementation. I didn't hear the word business plan. Is that kind of implied in there?
That was on the first slide. Those are elements that need to go into a business plan.
Okay. All right. Well, so how do we assess what critical mass is for an organization like this?
There's no easy answer to that. You have to sort of intuit it from the place that you're operating in. You know, in a small community, it's certainly different than it is in a place like Tucson, because, as I said the last time, if you have a community-wide program, you've got 220 members and they're spread all over the Tucson area, you know, I want the whole wheat fresh-baked bread, but I don't want to drive all the way across town to get it. So it has to be, you have to consider the convenience factor as well as the number of people involved and the range of goods and services that are involved. I think rather than try to figure that out on a numerical basis, just try to get as big as you can, as fast as you can. And one way to do that is to get this rapid buy-in by using a program like Community Way. And in Sonoma County, California, they're starting a merchant rebate program as their first stage in development, what they're doing is recruiting merchants in Sonoma County to offer rebates to their customers. And this is another effective way to do it. So they've already printed up 50,000 plastic cards that are going to be swipe cards that will be used at the merchant locations. And when they recruit a merchant, the merchant decides what percentage rebate they want to give. Let's say it's 5%. So you got the local co-op grocery store. Well, that's not a good example. Let's take a more for-profit business. Let's say it's a local hardware store. The hardware store, every time a customer comes in, they tell them, oh, we've got this rebate program. Would you like to have a card? And they give them a card. So they swipe the card and they get 5% back on what they just purchased. So if they just bought $100 worth of merchandise, they get a $5 credit on their card. So next time they come to the store, they can use that $5 credit to pay for what they buy.
I was just at a restaurant the other night in Dallas on Broadway, and they gave me a plastic card. And they said, when you get when you spend $100 here, you can use this card for a dinner here or at some other restaurant, El Charo and El Refugio.
Yep.
Is that like that?
Yeah, that's like that.
I had no idea.
I didn't know that was operating here either.
Z-I-V-A-C. I'm putting a good word in for it because it's great food. It's Mexican. It's unique. I'm a real chef.
Which one was it?
It's on Broadway and Swan. Z-I-V-A-C. And on Saturday night, they have a Cuban band who's excellent.
And what's the name of this card? Do they have a card name?
I have a card.
I'll share a group of local restaurants. And I found out the other day.
I love Goodwill, sure. I don't like it. But, I don't know.
Power card.
That's been going for 5 years.
Has it?
Yeah. I never knew about it. Power card.
Well, I don't know about the specifics of the power card. I won't speak to that.
I think these are local restaurants, local food. They band together because they use natural local products.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We found out from Local First, so you can find out more about them.
Yeah, they're all members of Local First.
Okay, well, good. Well, the point that I'm trying to make is a rebate program can be a good way to get a rapid buy-in by the entire community. Then you can shift over to the mutual credit clearing.
Yeah, Thomas, with your presentation at Sustainable Tucson, I spoke there were money is two things. One, we met mechanism of change, two is the creation of value. Is that right?
A creation of value?
It creates monetizes value.
Well, money should be strictly a medium of exchange. It should serve that single function, but it gets created in the process of the exchange of value.
And in the system you're talking about, are you detaching from the U.S. dollar?
The dollar, I spoke about the dollar being two things. It's a medium of exchange and a measure of value. And that's an unfortunate situation which results from legal tender laws. The dollar should not be the measure of value. The dollar should be only the medium of exchange. As I said the other night, the dollar was originally defined as so much silver. And that was what defined the value. A Federal Reserve note is a credit instrument. You need to have a way of evaluating any credit instrument. You can't evaluate it in terms of itself. You know, what's a share of General Motors stock worth? We evaluate that in dollars. What's a dollar worth? Well, we need to have some objective way of evaluating a Federal Reserve note dollar. And we don't have that because of legal tender. Legal tender says you have to accept this note just as if it were silver.
I got that.
And so in our credit exchange, what's the measure of value?
Typically, when we start a credit clearing exchange, we use the existing concept. We all have the dollar concept as a measure of value because we spend dollars every day. We know what things are worth in terms of dollars. So we're talking about a language of value. We have to start with the language we understand. We understand the dollar language. And then we have to move to some objective measure. We could go back to a weight of silver, the original definition of the silver dollar, or we could use a local measure, a unit of electrical power, or
different commodities, or the food or items.
Yes, exactly. What do we grow here? No polish. Yeah.
That's a community consensus on everything.
Yeah.
Why not build it on a unit of labor?
Well, how do you define labor? You know, a lot of people have tried to use a labor hour as a unit of value, but an hour of labor doing what?
Practicing medicine or
sweeping
a
floor.
Yeah, right.
So isn't it true that the value is down the road subsequently becomes determined by the two partners of the exchange?
Sure.
I'm working 2 hours, but I think my hours are very valuable, so you have to give me, you know, 20,000 calories for that.
Yeah, every value is subjective, and it's ultimately, in the exchange value, it's ultimately determined by the parties to the exchange, the buyer and the seller. But you have to have a way of measuring value. And, you know, we try to define one single thing, like gold or silver, to make it convenient to express the value of every other thing in terms of that item.
What are some examples of ways to fund people who are working on
capital issues? Well, initially you need some startup capital, either in the form of grants, and a lot of LET systems in the UK have had grants, or in the form of investment capital, if it's a for-profit, or if it's a non-profit that agrees to pay back the investment capital. But ultimately you have to have a sustaining source of revenue, which would be fee for services. And that fee should be a transaction fee. You know, the more you use the system, the more value it is to you. So you pay a certain percentage on every transaction. You don't charge interest on balances. That's just going back to the interest money system, the debt money system. So transaction fees are the way to go. You can also charge fees for advertising on your website or in your directory or newsletter.
First, let me say I'm well aware of the fact that we need to, as we talk about transitioning towards a sustainable future, we need to, you know, we need to keep slapping band-aids on symptoms. But at what point do we start thinking about this whole concept of money and what we use money for? And all of this seems to have an underlying assumption that our highest aspirations as a species is to be economic actors. Because we keep having this talk about we have to have money in order to survive, which means we need to keep producing. And if that's true, then it is inherently unsustainable. So at what point do we kind of move the conversation and start thinking about what we as communities can really do? Because to me, quality of life is more important than how many dollars I have in my wallet. And so I may not have a need to go down and, you know, pay a street line, but having a street line downtown while I'm shopping, you know, contributes to quality of life. You know, some concepts like that. So it seems this whole concept of, you know, having to produce or only looking at the production aspects of it seems to me you're pointing this away.
The whole idea of just needing this and this, what do we really need?
And yeah, does it really have a monetary value, or should it have a monetary value? Because, you know, the point I keep making when I get in all these conversations, and, you know, we've had this conversation before, Tom, is, you know, when we look at sustainability, look at what sustainability really means, where in the natural world does the central bank of worms exist that charges interest to trees to burn soil services? I mean, it's really not necessary.
If you look at biological systems, you'll see this exchange throughout the hierarchy. And what we're talking about here is a localized exchange system, so that human beings in their activities and their needs and their ability to produce find another way of accomplishing what they need to do. Right now, we're so dependent on large-scale systems outside of our local communities that we're participating in. This is not about, you know, materialism is about trying to create a path so that we can actually relocalize our local exchange system so that we can sustain ourselves, so that we can continue to be here.
Yeah, I think it's about redistribution of resources. It's about community building. That's what this whole thing is about. It's about community building.
So the
we've chosen to talk about the monetary aspect of community building. There are other communities who talk about health and this and that. But Tom has always been about community building.
Yeah, the question is, how do we relate to one another in our local communities? And the other night I made a distinction between reciprocal exchange and gift exchange. We can envision a gift economy, and we do have gift economies in limited circumstances. You know, within the household and the family, maybe even the clan and the tribe, people freely give and receive without keeping score. But when it becomes more impersonal, then people need to have a more formal way of assuring reciprocity. If I'm producing shoes, for example, that's my livelihood, you know, and I'm good at making shoes, and the community needs shoes, and they're buying shoes, or they're accepting shoes, I need to make sure that I'm going to get what I need from the people that take my shoes. Now, with close personal relationships, people that are my close neighbors that I know very well, yeah, I can just give them the shoes and know that they're going to take care of me according to what I need. But if I'm selling to somebody who's distant and maybe I'm not going to see again, I have to have some way of assuring that I get what I need. So I think there is certainly a place for localized reciprocal exchange mechanisms, and that's why I put so much effort into it.
Question over there. Yeah, number of these. Two. There's never one in the books. There's the community, there's the financial money. I'm concerned right now with the jumpstarting this. We have this economy coming down on us. We said kind of beginning us in 2 years, maybe sooner, maybe a little bit later. And a lot of things we're talking about, I don't think they're going to have anything to do with my own feeling. They're getting this thing jumpstart. I'm going to make two suggestions. One is we do an inventory of the possible members who would be in the first group, including maybe some institutional organizations, and identify the items that could be exchanged now. Organize an exchange system for them. Also, I think this is a very viable thing, look to create new items for exchange. I think our imagination goes to that, and not just trying to get an exchange system for items that are here now. Green things are going to come in, there's new ways of facilitating the human development of everybody. And we can be helping on that, and that could be. Then once we get as started to get some of the funds out of the system, then look to the population increase of the memberships and get to the point where we have a viable here 1 year, we can begin to rapidly see it other places. Because we're talking about something that must be global.
Yeah.
In a few years,
yeah,
big enough to sustain the people that are members. And the growth rate of what I see now is going to take 10 to 15 years. Because, but I say, hey, okay, these are nice, but this isn't going to do the job right now when the real thing fits. And we've got to do something that is needed now.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe, maybe you can elaborate that and try to get some other people to work on it with you.
I'd like to raise a couple of issues here. I mean, one is, Gene mentioned before the possibility of our issuing script. We are going to start with a LETS system, that's, you know, zero balance ledger. However, we started considering recruiting small businesses, local retailers, et cetera, local craftsmen, local retailers who are already established. And for a retailer, it seemed like it would be really hassle to try to get involved in a credit card system with us. You know, if a guy, for example, if a person is a grocer and is selling, you know, he's dealing with 150 customers a day, it seems like there would be a necessity, at least from the start, for that business to have some means of a physical exchange. You know, so that's something that I'd like people to think about. The other is on a philosophical level, you know, I don't think we should dismiss what David is saying entirely. For this reason, I'm an artist. Okay, in my previous life I used to do different things, you know, but now I'm an artist, and if I want to exchange my goods with another person who is selling something that I actually need for my survival, it's going to be difficult for me to find that market. And so I think we are going to have to eventually work out some means of, you know, maybe cultural exchange or, you know, or mutual support or something that will allow me, for example, as an artist, to go on living and creating my art. And you guys will help me to live, right, just to give me food and shelter and stuff like that. So it's not, you know, it's not exactly an idle suggestion, right. That's my point.
I wanted to address what Larry's point is that how many members do we have to get? 48? We have 80 members. Slightly under 100 in our registry of people who want to become members and participate.
And we've already started with Plan A, which is assembling the list of goods and services that people can provide.
And that would be something that would be completed when the system's online and people identify holes.
That virtual is sort of like 5,000.
What's that?
My threshold is sort of like 5,000. I mean, I don't know what everybody is, you're going to struggle until you get up to a certain point. And at a certain point, it's going to grow on itself. But until then, I mean, it's going to follow the plateau. And the various reasons, Tom Tom. Done many of them in one article. And one of the very important things that I have not noticed and forgotten is that if many people who don't have anything to sell come in, they buy, and then they're stuck. Mm-hmm. And it kills the system.
Yeah.
That means you don't let somebody in if they don't have something to sell. Because you're close with that. And that, you know,
well, you don't give them a line of credit. Okay. They're not an issuing number.
A lot of people come in, and the other ones, they come in,
yeah,
and they all offer themselves, you know, in debt.
That's happened over and over again.
I think the real thing, there's a lot of practical transactional problems to creating a wealthy currency. But I think the real fundamental barrier is the fact that if you don't have anything I can buy, I don't have anything you can buy, you don't have anything he can buy, and there's simply no way to close the circle no matter how we, you know, how we, what mechanism we could set up. There's just so many gaps in the circle that it's really difficult. So my sense is that the real focus, in addition to the questions and the only focus, but one of the real critical focuses has got to be on finding, patching together ways so that I can afford to accept currency from you, because I will be able to buy something with it. Mm-hmm. If I can't buy anything with it, I can't afford to accept it.
Sure. Well, that's why I talk about starting with trusted issuers.
Right. And just on that regard, if there was one of a number of strategies that it would be to get TEP involved, because the example you gave of that coal company is a perfect example of something that might work. And it doesn't have to be across the board. If, for example, TEP were to say, we will participate in this program by providing low-income elderly people with vouchers for health. We'll only do it for low-income elderly people. You know, we'll only give them $20 a month.
Are they creating the money?
They're creating the money by creating the vouchers, which somebody, which they can then hand to somebody and say, do $20 worth of work for me. And you can give it to somebody else because it's TEP, and you know you can do something.
Okay, that's a donation-based
That would be a piece
currency.
Of it. And what I'm saying is we have to have a lot of different pieces. So the restaurants, the credit card, I mean, all of these things have to be the pieces so that I can do something with it.
Sure.
Well, of course, there was 100 years ago, it would be a different kind of a situation, because 100 years ago, we had an economy and a culture where skills were distributed throughout the population, and people naturally migrated to skill building as they grew up. It was just part of life. You had to be a producer. You learned that early. One of the things about the transition movement is about reskilling. We have to understand that any really serious attempt to build a local exchange system is really a part of building a local economy. And you can't really separate the two, because there are so many needs that need to be developed in addition to just the design of the exchange mechanism and how to implement it. Now, it's pretty clear for those of us who have looked at this, and I started back in 1981 at a Rob Swan workshop in New Hampshire, so I've been thinking about this a long time too. And anything that is small scale, forget it, because it isn't going to go very far. We really need to think about what Larry's talking about, which is that we've got a time constraint here. We need to ramp this thing up, and we need to incorporate enough of the complexity of where we are right now in terms of overcoming obstacles like, you know, well, what can I produce? How do we get that momentum going? Right now, I've got a couple things to say. The Asian Development Bank just released a report last week. They're the first ones to actually calculate what the impact of the economic meltdown in the world in the last 12 months has been. Apparently, we have lost $50 trillion over the last 12 months in the global economy. Now, that shows you this kind of scale of the inflationary spiral that we're in right now. So if you got dollars, you're worth a lot of money. But this is an excellent opportunity, but because of the scarcity of dollars, to actually, you know, begin to monetize local value. Now, when we did the Schumann video a couple summers ago, we had a little brainstorming session. Some of you were there, and we talked about those industries which are highly like the Walmarts, where they're simply we bring these big stores in, we buy our dollars to the community, major leaps in the economy. So import substitution, that is the sort of the name of the economic development strategy that we need to employ to relocalize. But there are a number of gaps, so we need to identify what those gaps are. There's obviously a lot of local businesses, but if their supply chain doesn't extend within the city, we're not going to get very much velocity in that new currency. So we need to think about that. So looking at helping local businesses that are already established, using trusted issuers like Tom said, looking at actual social problems and economic problems where there's a constituency like unemployed young people. You could probably assemble 5 businesses, 10 businesses that serve people from 16 to 25 and actually get enough velocity going where you could create employment among that age group and you would have a fairly sustainable set of things going. But it seems like we need to get a lot of these little successes brewing while at the same time paying attention to where the big chunks of opportunity are, which is water, energy, transportation, food. This is the stuff where we're importing huge scales every day in this community, all 1 million of us. And the sooner we start closing the gap on food, energy, water, and transportation, and making those opportunities, business opportunities, I think the faster we can ramp up. So to figure out an exchange system that accomplishes that, I think that's where we're.
And I just want to say something here, which kind of relates to what Bob was saying. We are trying to start at Sustainable Tucson, an economic working group, which I would hope would be a group that would do some of what you're suggesting. That would make sense to me. So this might be an opportunity for us to collaborate with respect to giving you perhaps some of that kind of knowledge.
I just want to clarify. So you're looking for ways to, do kind of rebates or something for things like food, maybe phone, right? A great place for phone, food, groceries, like Tucson Co-op, maybe. I mean, we're
food conspiracy.
Gas, water, clothing. Is that what you're trying to be driving
at? Pardon
me?
I think those are the most powerful because everybody uses them.
Okay.
So to get this critical mass.
Those are their avenues you
want to
go.
The trusted issuers are the ones that provide things that are in everyday demand.
Water, electricity, food. Mm-hmm. Do any of these food chains that are national, are they willing maybe to participate in something local? Mm-hmm.
Well, you got some more local ones like Basha's. They're Arizona. Sunflower's local? I thought they were out of Colorado.
They're close.
Are they?
They're
also, could we use this before they close 2 stores in Tucson?
It seems like Colorado would be another one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, back to that.
Yeah, doesn't this also is a print of vouchers?
No.
No, we can see it online.
Can be entirely virtual.
Entirely virtual.
I mean, you can print vouchers, but you don't have to.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, because if that all takes a start of what you need, you need basically 2 companies to get the thing rolling. He's talking more on a grander scale. He's talking about something really good, which is starting on a smaller scale with a credit company, with TGP.
Mm-hmm.
And basically just get the thing out there. And the people that are running it are going to be taking those loans. And that's where maybe a grant will come in as a cushion for those people that they can take their loans. Because, nothing can be built in a day. So you have to start slow and then go up from there. So I'm just thinking, just get the thing done. I'm just thinking, what do you need to do to get there? Is the next step? You need to print them one.
Well, with Tucson Traders, we started with a notebook. Each member had a page in the notebook, and we kept track of all the purchases and sales. And you had a running account of your balance on the page. And every month we would Xerox those and send them out as account statements.
How did that notebook grow into something?
Well, it quickly grew into a computer database. But, we still never achieved critical mass. We got up to about 220 members. And then it sort of gradually died.
How's the Weir Bank?
Well, that was a different circumstance. That was in the midst of the Depression. So you had the economic necessity going for you as well as the desire. And it quickly got up to scale because it was business oriented. It was the business people themselves that started it. Huh? I don't know if they had any government backing at all.
Well, as far as Mayor tells us, that level is accepted. There's a difference.
If you could get local government backing, that would be great.
Raise your question, Mayor.
Piggyback on the gap, which you were mentioning, Bob was saying, I want to maybe learn stuff. And if Dave's forum, you were talking about tabletop manufacturing, and then I met a tabletop manufacturer. What else? You didn't know. But that we all kind of, I just want to promote Pro Neighborhoods. I really didn't know too much about them, but they just had a free workshop, and I'm sure they'll offer it again, or we can ask them to have a workshop on just what we're talking about. Learn how to view neighborhoods as places of assets rather than places of deficiency. Mm-hmm. Participants will learn how to community groups can identify their talents, skills, and knowledge of their neighborhood residents. So I don't know if they've already got some plan going, but that's what we need to do. Everybody, because I was thinking, what can I sell? And, you know, I have a lot of chard growing in my garden, and I can sell that.
Yeah,
you
know, local currency as well.
Yeah.
I want to make people aware that we do have ongoing meetings. The group has been meeting weekly in the research and development stage, but on the first and the third Tuesday, we meet at the Ward 6 offices. We meet from 7 till 9. The Ward 6 is at 3202 East 1st Street. And people are welcome to come to participate in that. I don't see the necessity of Sustainable Tucson creating another group that parallels ours. I would like to see them join forces and use that venue since it's already existing and open and welcoming. And then the second thing that I wanted to announce was a really, really free market that will be held August 19th.
September.
September 19th in Kimmel Park, from 8 in the morning until 11. And the way the really, really free market works is you look around your household for unused or unwanted items that are still good and could use someone a useful service, and bring them to Kimmel Park and just drop your things and look around at the other things people have brought and take what you want, leave what you don't.
Now, with you going back to the marketing, you said enhance, I guess local currency will enhance the opportunity to sell excess capacity. You were talking about the Chinese store. Is that just because you're putting more local dollars
in a Chinese store?
Chinese restaurant.
Oh.
You said it was, you said, for example, all restaurants have food left over. They aren't selling.
Yeah.
People don't have the money to go
right.
buy.
Yeah.
Is that what you meant, just local dollars, local currency with more money?
Yeah.
Or is that some other strategy?
Yeah, commercial trade exchanges typically have a lot of restaurant members.
Yeah.
Because it provides a way for them to sell more meals. They don't get cash necessarily, but they get credits that they can spend in the system to get things that they need.
More people coming through their doors.
Yeah.
I actually have a question for you guys. I guess I'm curious about how you have been financing yourselves, and you have that kind of question. And I'm also curious how you're going about marketing.
Well, we made about $1.25 at the Ignite Tucson. Thin man. So we're having that
right in here.
But I do have some quotations that I'll hand around for people.
We really need an SSL certificate, secure socket layer online, so you can totally not have your money.
What's that cost?
Pro Neighborhoods.
We're looking at Pro Neighborhoods. Yeah. But it may not be
that's working more than all the two members of the neighborhood.
Speak up, Jane. What? Speak up. Do you guys have a business plan?
Not yet, no.
Because we will be putting one together for the Pro Neighborhood.
Well, what I want to suggest is that Micro Business Advancement Center has like a 6-week program that you start it and you do your business plan. When you get through it, you have your business plan, and they have money to spend.
What's it called?
Micro Business Advancement Center. And they do orientations every Wednesday. You can look up their website, but they do orientations. You just sign up for that orientation. A couple of you go and you'll write your business plan. Matt has money that it can lend up to a certain amount. But we also have a deal with another group that can lend up to $50,000. So it might be worth your while. I mean, as long as there's a business plan, it's a business.
I checked into it, and they have a fee for their workshop, but score the
you don't do the same thing.
That they don't walk you through it, but they do provide assistance and advice for putting together business plans.
I think you all need to check that out. You'll win for And I was thinking, I think the gentleman, he had 2 points to focus on. First one was inventory. I think inventory was together with us. I think that's really big to focus on. Mm-hmm. Secondly, was brainstorming ideas. And I was thinking, what are people's expenses, right? Expenses are rent, food, those types of things. The landlord. Maybe you have a landlord.
Yeah.
Also, I was thinking, the people that are going to buy in really have to care about the plan. You know, that's all I have to care about, sustainability, or excited about the opportunity to help the plan. So more so than any kind of financial gain, you really need people that are going to have that drive to help things out.
There are a lot of groups like that.
You have a plan?
Yeah, as far as the business plan, if you're talking about a business plan, I've heard you mention, Tom, several times that the commercial exchange programs basically have been able to sustain themselves.
Yeah.
It would seem that perhaps taking a look or getting a copy of a commercial exchange program and what their business plan looks like, would it be specific idiosyncrasies that are different about a community-based one? And it seems like it should be able to massage
from the right place. Yeah, there's the International Reciprocal Trade Association, IRTA. It's one of the trade associations for the reciprocal trade industry. And there's another one called NAIT, National Association of Trade Exchanges. IRTA has a website. I don't know about Nate. I'm pretty sure they do. And there's barternews.com, which is a magazine for the industry that provides a lot of information.
What was it, IRTA? The
International Reciprocal Trade Association.
Really go forward on on creating a local economy to come to our meetings, or do we need to do something else?
Well, you know, as I said to you, same because of large minds and economic working together. I mean, I do think that sustainable treatment is a group, you know, we've got a pretty robust membership of about 800 people in our database, certainly. And I think together with Local First, I mean, I think there's a broader community. Every year that's really being called for is I listen to Tom and to Bob. So my suggestion is maybe some of us get together after this meeting closes and let's just put our heads together and decide, you know, who really does need to be in this conversation so that whatever is launched is done so in a way that's
September 1st.
1st. September 1st.
Can I can the people that want to share, what happens to these meetings and then you go home and somebody, the gatekeeper, has all the undisclosed emails? Can we put a little check by our name and then we can make an email address and we can speak with each other? Is that okay with you?
We were planning.
Okay, good.
I didn't ask everybody to put their email addresses because I know some of you have them already in constant contact. I'm going to have to, if you don't put them on here, I'm going to have to go retrieve those numbers, those addresses from someplace. But I will make a list of everybody who's here.
Okay, good.
Make sure that if you want us to contact you with them, make sure I can read it.
Put your email on it.
And I have 5 copies of Pro Neighborhood. Is actually given a little workshop on time banks. That is, that's what we're doing. This is another name. So that is, it's such a good thing. You've got Pro Neighborhood.
I know.